Good morning, everybody. My name is Tony Lee. Welcome to the show. I have a guest, but, you know, in a sense, I have to say I kind of consider you a friend because I've known you for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And by long, I'm talking decades that I could go back and, you know, when I first met you and began to learn what you're all about and what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And who I'm talking to, by the way, folks, is Tim Palmquist. And Tim, I want to let you describe what you do, because basically I could say that you're part of the anti-abortion movement. You're
mm-hmm.
probably the anti-abortion movement. I don't know of one that's larger and more active than your efforts, but let me hear it from you. How would we describe what you do?
Well, there are a lot of organizations, a lot of efforts within the anti-abortion movement, within the pro-life movement, and we don't try to do everything, but we do try to focus on what's happening here locally. We try to deal with the abortions that are happening here in our local area. And so our focus is reaching the women who are going in for abortions week by week and offering help to them, seeing what we can do to encourage them to keep their babies
mm-hmm.
for the sake of not only their baby, but for the sake of themselves.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before we started, when I was working with the State Assembly here in California as the Chief of Staff for the 29th District, I really felt moved to work in that direction, the same direction you're working in, to try to mm-hmm. get people to understand that abortion is, in my mind, in my opinion, not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that we really should not do that. There are other alternatives, I think, that should be looked at prior to conception.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, is that your thought, is that if a person is abortion a matter of convenience for those who didn't take the thought and the action ahead of time to keep from getting pregnant? Or is there some medically indicated reason for abortion that most of these women that you are talking to as they come up brought them to that point? What is their reason for being there?
Well, over the years, we've dealt with, of course, a wide variety of circumstances with the women that we've encountered. And some of them have been truly tragic situations where, you know, they're told that their baby is going to be horribly deformed, things like that. And in one case, a woman said, I think we've had more than one case actually, where a woman said that she was told that her baby was dead
mm-hmm.
and that she needed to do this. And so we said, well, can we just get you a second opinion? Can we bring you to somebody who can check things out, make sure there's no heartbeat? And she did that, and there was a heartbeat, and she was so thankful that her baby was alive. And
mm-hmm.
here's somebody who didn't choose abortion.
Mm-hmm.
She was there because she was told to be there,
mm-hmm.
and it was a blessing to her, not only to her baby, but to her, that that we were there to help her to find the truth about that her baby was really okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there have been other situations where there have been very difficult health issues. There have been situations where a woman was told that her baby, or babies, in some cases it was twins,
mm-hmm.
were going to be severely deformed. And sometimes they were and sometimes they weren't. But even in the cases where the babies were severely deformed and in some cases died at birth, those mothers, again, have been very grateful to us
mm-hmm.
for themselves, for the experience that they were able to at least hold their child and
mm-hmm.
have a memorial service for their child.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something very much that we try to reach the heart of the mother for her sake, because
mm-hmm.
this isn't something that most women really desire.
Right. Well, there are many other questions I have related to that whole issue of what happens to the woman psychologically and emotionally when she goes through this process. But I would wonder how you got involved. What brought
mm-hmm.
you to this whole thing?
Well, interestingly enough, it all started with radio. I had a radio program up in Delano a number of years ago. My my dad had the radio station. So, you know, when your dad has a radio station, it's easy to get a job there. So I had this radio program, a call-in radio program, and it was on a Christian station. Mm-hmm. And we were taking prayer requests from people like that. Just so happened that the young woman who's now my wife was the one taking the screening the calls for me. And so mm-hmm. we were both involved in that. And there were a couple of situations that we encountered in that experience. One of them was a woman whose baby was born right at 24 weeks. And her baby was in Valley Children's Hospital, which at that time was in Fresno. And at that time I was going to college in Fresno, and so I would stop by Valley Children's and see her little baby that was a little bit smaller than my hand. And this mother kept saying over and over to me, I just can't get over the fact that they're doing abortions of babies at this age. And so that was one that really hit us. And then there was another one, a young woman from Tulare who called in, who was, I believe, about 16 years old, and said that she was pregnant and she wanted an abortion. And why she called us for that, I have no idea. Well, actually, I do have an idea, because at the time, my wife and I didn't really know what to do to help her, and so we just literally had to go down to a bookstore and look and see what can we find here that would help this girl in this situation.
But you're on a radio show where you're really trying to talk people out of getting abortions, and here someone called you to ask you how to get one?
Well, at the time, we certainly were pro-life, but it wasn't the purpose of the radio show to talk people out of abortions. It was just a general, actually, it was a music show and prayer, uh-huh. and, you know, it was just mostly Christian entertainment, if you want to call it that.
Okay.
And it just so happened this young woman called, and we met with her, and eventually we found out that she went to a certain church and got a hold of her youth pastor. And long and the short of it was, there's every indication that she was lying about the whole thing. Mm. She was just a young woman who liked to do things to get attention.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, that experience was used to help us start to see how do we reach women in this situation. Mm-hmm. So maybe that lie developed something good in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Once you got started in you know, you formed the idea, you realize now that you're going to have to be pro-life. You're going to have mm-hmm. to try and stop people from having an abortion. What process did you go through to figure out exactly what methodology are you going to use to do that? I mean, do you pick it somewhere? Do you try to get on other radio stations mm-hmm. and TV stations? Do you start a publication? I mean, how did you... What went through your mind as to how are you going to go about doing this?
Well, initially, even though we could see, okay, that this abortion is bad and we need to be against it, initially it wasn't something that we necessarily saw, that I necessarily saw us being in ministry for. I actually, my vision at that time, around the time we got married, was that I wanted to be a part of an inner city ministry in Jackson, Mississippi. Ministry there called Voice of Calvary that had been around for a number of years, a very dedicated man named John Perkins had started it during the civil rights era, and it was just very effective inner city ministry, and I thought, I want to be a part of that. I want to make a difference in people's lives. And shortly after we got married, it just so happened that my wife got pregnant on our honeymoon, and that tends to change things a little bit. She's thinking, okay, am I going to have a baby in one of these shotgun houses? And then her mom was having some health issues, and we needed to be around for her mom. And so she's saying, I don't think Jackson, Mississippi is going to work anymore. Is there something we can do here?
Mm-hmm.
And so we started looking at there's a pregnancy center here in town that was here back then. That was fairly new back then. But we checked with them and actually went through a seminar with them. But we said, you know, we really would like to actually reach the women who are going in for abortions. You know, being in a center is nice, but we want to be right there when they're making that decision. Is there anybody who does that? And they said, well, yeah, actually, there is a group that does that. And what common misconception about Terry and me, people think we founded the group. That actually wasn't true. It was there 2 years before we were a part of it. And so we walked in and became a part of this group, and for the first 6 months or so, we just stood there silently. Probably hard for people to imagine nowadays, but there were other people there who were more experienced than us, and so we would listen to them, we would pray for them and things, but we didn't talk ourselves for that first 6 months, not because they wouldn't let us, but because we were afraid. What do you say to people in this situation?
Yeah. Tim, let me ask you to hold on for a second here. I've got to take a break and pay a couple of bills with our commercials, but want you to just kind of remember where you are, because when I come back, I want to continue on this talk about how you got into what you're doing and what were you thinking at the time? Mm-hmm. Folks, hang on. We're talking with Tim Palmquist, and we're talking about abortion. Tim and his wife, Terry, are probably the most active people I know of in this area. And as you mentioned, there are other groups, but certainly I think Tim and Terry are among those who have put a lot of time and effort into the anti-abortion, for-life, pro-life end of things. Hang on. And we're back again. I'm Tony Lee. Glad to be with you again this week. Tim Palmquist is my guest. And we're talking about abortions. We're talking about a group that has been an active for many years. And you said it goes back about 30 years, you said, when you first got started doing this.
Right. The organization actually started on Valentine's Day of 1984.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And the whole intent is to try to make people give a second thought to this whole issue of abortion. Mm-hmm. What is it? What does it mean? What are the ramifications of it? And we were talking about some of the things that you've experienced as you were kind of moving in your journey to get that message out to people. So please continue.
Well, I mentioned that in our early months of being out there talking to women going in for abortions, we actually didn't talk. We just simply were there watching and praying and being pretty silent. And it was after a few months, the first time that of course all along my wife has been the one more effective at actually talking directly to the women, and it's no surprise that a woman reaches a woman better.
She'd rather talk to another woman who can understand more where she's coming from.
Right, but I was there to support her and help a little bit when I could. But in this first situation she had where a woman actually changed her mind, it was a woman who didn't speak a word of English, and my wife didn't speak a word of Spanish.
Interesting.
And somehow, she actually came in there with a little baby she was holding that had a machine with it that she had to keep suctioning the baby out with this machine, and so she had a baby that was clearly having health issues herself. The baby was having health issues, and she just wasn't ready for another baby. Mm-hmm. And so, even though didn't speak the same language at all, my wife somehow convinced her to get in the car with her, bring her over to the pregnancy center where she got the help and decided to keep her baby. So to me, that was almost miraculous, seeing that happen. How does a woman who doesn't even speak the language trust this other woman who's trying to help her?
You know, one of the things that I've wondered is, what goes on in the mind of the women who are about to get an abortion? They've come to this place to get an abortion. I'm really not at all shy about saying this, but I have a son who is now 37, and his mother had made the decision not to have him, and I did not agree with her. But I guess this is back in the days when it's in the 70s, and I think I was of the belief that, okay, it's her body. I can't force her. I can't tie her down and tell her, no, you can't do this. I just verbally let her know that I'm not in favor of this, so please don't do it. But she insisted. So I drove her to the abortion place, but I couldn't deal with staying there, so I left.
Right.
And probably 2 hours later, she called me, fortunately, and said she had changed her mind.
Wow.
So now, every time for these last 37 years, when I even think about my son, let alone interact with him, I really get this overwhelming feeling of joy that you know, had it not been for her change of mind, you wouldn't be here. I would not have you.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, do women ever think about that? I don't know if this may be their first and only abortion or if they'd been through this before, but have you encountered women later in life who went through it and now they're really, really regretting it? They're wishing they had never done that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things we do at certain times of the year, we have two 40-day vigils every year, and that's 24 hours a day of prayer for 40 days. But one of the things we do during those vigils is put up crosses as a memorial to the babies and mothers who went through abortion that week. And about this past August, my wife encountered a woman out there who said that Terry had put up a cross for her a number of years ago, and it was right after she had an abortion, and that affected her so much that she said that she decided right then and there she would never do that again. And she said, I just want to thank you that now I have three children. And she attributed it all to that day when Terry put up a cross for her coming out after the abortion. So it is something that, you know, women, I think it's healthy, you know, we look at it, of course, from a spiritual perspective of looking at how this affects their relationship with God, but even from a psychological perspective, it's something that denial, repressing what happened there is not healthy for a woman, and it is something that she needs to come to terms with. And that is one of the things we do see with women coming in for repeat abortions, that a lot of times the reason they're doing this again is that they really never came to terms with what they did the first time or the previous times.
It's odd that with that feeling they'd still do it again.
Wow.
And the other end of that question, I guess, is have you run into women who have not had the abortion, who thought about it, they started to, they almost did, but then they changed their mind, and now they have this child, this son, this daughter, who maybe has been with them 8 or 10 years, and they're realizing what they almost lost.
Right.
Have you run into that?
Oh, absolutely. We on a regular basis, we have people stop by, drive their car by, and stop and say, "Hey, I want you to know, I was coming here a few years ago, and in some cases, they say I was really mad at you when I came in here, and I didn't want you to know that I left that day without going through with the abortion. But here's my little boy, here's my little girl, and so that does happen on a regular basis. In fact, just last night there was a group out at the prayer vigil. I didn't witness this myself, but this group out there praying said that a man drove up in a Mercedes and said that he had just found out, his mother had just told him that she had actually planned to abort him, and she had changed her mind there. So yeah, it is something that obviously that's the biggest perk of our work is having those kind of encounters.
I have never told my son. I felt that it was his mother's obligation to do that. I didn't want to take the chance on destroying the relationship between him and her, and she and I have been divorced for over, gosh, I guess coming up on 30 years. And she and I do not have contact with one another. So I don't know if she's ever had that conversation with him or not. But for his entire life, I made the choice that I would not want to be the one to tell him that, because I guess in my mind it was her decision and choice. And I'm glad she chose ultimately not to do it. But on the other hand, I don't want to tell him, you know, your mom almost killed you, and, you know, let him sit on that for a while. I just thought that's going to be her job to deal with.
It is something so difficult for the men to deal with. You know, we see that every week on the abortion day when the men are there and just feeling so powerless. You know, many times they don't want them to go through with it, but they also want to be there to be supportive, to be loving to their wife or to their girlfriend. Just last week, there was a man in that situation my wife was talking to, saying, "Well, you just need to go up there and just let her know you want to provide for this baby. You want to take care of this baby. And so she finally got through to him. He finally headed up the stairs to reach her. And right at that moment, she was coming down the stairs. And when they saw each other, it was just the tears just started to pour. So when we see those opportunities, when the men say, hey, I got to at least make an effort here to try to do something, it just can make a huge difference.
But is there any legal way that a man can? Because, I mean, literally, this is part of you that she's about to get rid of. This is your future child that she's about to get rid of. It seems like a man ought to have a say in that.
Well, yeah.
But yet it's her body, so I don't know. It just seems like by California law, I don't know, California doesn't seem to include men in much of anything, it seems, but,
no.
I mean, unless it's on the paying end, you know, the men get to pay for everything, but, and I know someone's going to get mad at me for that out there, but I do believe that to be true, but tell me from your knowledge and experience, is there anything that the man can legally do to maintain his opportunity, I guess, to be a father, and... She says, no, I want an abortion. He says, no, that's my child. I don't want you to have one. What can he do?
Well, there are a lot of incongruities in the law, as you know, Tony. And that certainly is a big one of them, that a man who fathers a child can be obligated for 18 years to care for that child but has no voice on whether or not the child should live or die at that moment. I think... You know, not being a lawyer, of course, myself, I think there is legal room for arguments to be made there, and I think it's something that creative legal minds should be looking at, you know, to try to find ways to argue that point, that, you know, if a man is responsible, then he should have a voice here. But you're right that generally the practical way it works out is that... men just don't seem to have any legal power to do anything in that situation.
We're going to take another short break. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation talking about abortion and this specific group. We'll find out more about Tim and his efforts and the people that work with him. So hang on. We'll be back. We're back again. My name is Tony Lee. Tim Palmquist. I almost get tongue-tied when I say that. Tim Palmquist is my guest and a man that I've known for many, many years. And I know that he has been very, very active in the field of anti-abortion or pro-life, I think is what people probably prefer.
Right.
The idea that abortions are just not the answer to whatever questions a person might be facing. Do you feel that there are times when an abortion is appropriate?
No. The former Surgeon General, I should say, C. Everett Koop, who was Surgeon General during the Reagan administration, he was actually a pediatric doctor, and he said he had never, in all of his years of practice, had never seen a situation where abortion was medically necessary. Now, there certainly are situations when it is medically necessary to terminate a pregnancy. In other words, terminating a pregnancy doesn't have to mean the death of the child necessarily. You know, there may be situations where the woman, because of her health issues or because of the baby's health issues, they say, you know, we've got to end this pregnancy, but to do so in a way that tries to save the baby's life. And there are also situations where the mother needs to go through certain medical procedures, maybe radiation for cancer, chemotherapy, something like that, and the baby may die as an unintended result of that. And that, again, would be an unintended consequence. It's not that they were deliberately intending to kill the baby. And so there are situations there where the baby's life may be lost, but it's not the same as an intentional abortion.
Well, with the intentional ones, though, what I'm thinking of is something, and these are two things that consistently come up when I was with the Right to Life group up in the Fresno area, for instance. It came up very often. What in the case of rape? What in the case of incest? father rapes daughter, daughter becomes pregnant,
mm-hmm.
daughter, 15 years old, is raped and becomes pregnant.
Right.
What about those situations?
Well, we've dealt with a number of those over the years as well, and certainly we would say again that the life of that child is every bit as valuable. In fact, there was one situation a few years ago, I'm thinking maybe 8 or 9 years ago now, where this Spanish-speaking woman came and said she was raped. She actually was illegal, and she had been brought over by, you know, they call them people that bring them over the border, coyotes. Mm-hmm. And this coyote who brought her over impregnated her, and she already had a 3-year-old son who was just the apple of her eye, and she just could not conceive of having a rapist child, and she just could not conceive of anything that would take her attention away from her son. And so she was just totally focused on rape and on abortion because of that rape. And eventually somehow we were able to help her to see that she could give the baby up for adoption. Mm-hmm. And she finally decided to do that, and she didn't want to see the baby at first. But eventually, just before the baby was born, not long before the baby was born, she found out that she was carrying a little girl. And when the baby was born and she did look at the baby, her attitude changed. Now, she actually did let the adoptive parents take the baby, and they had the baby, but they had the baby at home, but 10 days later, these adoptive parents got a call that really truly devastated them, really threw them into turmoil, and that was that the birth mother said, I just can't do this. I've got to have my little girl, because I thought when I look in her eyes that I would see the rapist.
Yeah.
But instead I see myself, and mm-hmm. I just can't let somebody else mm-hmm. care for that child. So the women who have been through this that we've experienced understand that even though they've been traumatized by this rape, that it's healthy and beneficial for them to use that as a chance to give life to the child. And women who go through abortion after rape describe the abortion procedure itself as if it were another rape.
Mm.
And so it really causes more trauma in a situation that's already traumatic.
Yeah.
And of course, the presence of that baby in the today's day of DNA and things like that, the actual presence of that living child can be evidence that could be used against a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
And if the baby is aborted, the one who is protected most by that abortion is the rapist.
Mm. That makes sense. I never thought of that, but that's very true. Now, what, I'm just curious, back to the beginning, back to your beginnings,
mm-hmm.
Are you doing the work that you do in the capacity as just a regular, ordinary citizen, a lay citizen, or as a minister?
Mm.
Are you a minister in any particular denomination? I mean, where does that fit into your thoughts and beliefs? Because you've mentioned prayer. I mean, mm-hmm. it's obvious that a spiritual component certainly is part of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, is that part of you being a pastor or being a minister or mm-hmm. anything of that sort?
Well, I certainly am a Christian, a believer in Jesus Christ, and I believe that because of what Jesus did for me, that because of his sacrifice for my sins, that he has called us to reach out to other people in his name to, you know, as he said, to love them the way he loved us. And so I'm not a professional minister. I did go to two different Christian colleges, didn't graduate from either of those, spent 2 years at Fresno Pacific, 1 year at Westmont, and then two more years at Fresno State. So my final degree was from Fresno State. But during those years, I did take a lot of Bible courses. But I never have, at least not to this time. It has been considered as far as becoming an actual credentialed minister. But at this time, it's not. My actual degree is in computer science.
Sounds like that's not closely related, but
So we certainly do use computers, and
I guess you do.
Some, you know, obviously websites, things like that. So there are some ways in which it relates, but it's not probably the best degree for this job.
And I guess on that note, I should mention that at some point we're going to give people a phone number where they can reach you in case they would like to participate in your efforts to get people to think twice before getting an abortion. The pro-life movement, of course, is alive and well in various ways. I mean, there are a lot of ways to get involved in that, but certainly they could do this through siding with your organization as well, and we're going to give them information, if you wish, as to how they do that.
Sounds good.
One of the things that I was also curious about, we talked a little about some of the negative implications of abortion and how this affects some of the women that have come to that point where they thought abortion was perhaps an option. And when we were off mic, as we were waiting for the commercials to roll through, you told me of a story, and I was not sure whether it was one that you wanted to share with people, but I certainly want to give you that option. It was about the lady...
Right.
Continue.
Right. I did, you know, I thought of that as I was talking about people driving by and showing us their children and saying thank you. I thought of this situation and thought, do I want to share that? But, you know, a number of years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago, I'm thinking, this woman, it was a day in late June, this woman drives by and she says, I just want you to see my little girl, a three-year-old girl in the back seat of the car, and just thank you for being here. You know, she wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys. And Terry, my wife, is asking her, is there anything we can do to help you? She says, no, I'm fine. I don't need anything. And what about the baby's father? Is he helping at all? No, but it's okay. I don't need any help from him. And so everything was fine. She was happy. We just thought this is just another one of those blessings that we've seen so many times. But we had no idea the tragedy we were about to learn of. Because one of the things we've done a number of times over the years is we've tried to keep in contact with those that we know of by sending them birthday cards, things like that, when we remember. And it just so happened that this little girl's birthday was just a few weeks from that time that we had encountered her there. So we thought, oh, let's send her a birthday card and keep in touch with her. And so then after sending her a birthday card, my wife called up and just wanted to greet her on her daughter's birthday. And when my wife asked for her, there were just tears on the other side of the phone. And my wife had no idea what she had... you know, the situation she was getting into there, because what had actually happened was just 2 weeks after this woman stopped by to thank us for the life of her daughter, just 2 weeks later, she actually went to the high bridge there, of the 58 and 99 intersection, and jumped off the bridge to kill herself. We learned through that situation that she was devastated because she had aborted a baby before her daughter, and seeing what joy her daughter had brought into her life was just causing turmoil in her life because of the previous abortion. And, you know, we had no idea that was going on. I mean, I just thought again and again, what should we have said to her that could have made that difference to save her own life?
If there was anything you could have said, I mean, perhaps no matter what you said, it may not have made a difference.
Right.
And I guess you're saddled with the question in your mind is, could you have made a difference had you known more?
Right.
Yeah. Sir, that's a terribly, that's a sad note to leave our section on here. We're going to come back in a minute and we'll do our final segment. But that certainly is a sobering thought and gives people something to think about as the ramifications of getting an abortion. And again, I'm not trying to tell people yes or no. I want you to get the information and make up your own mind, because you kind of can guess where I stand. You know, I would definitely say no. But you've got to make that choice on your own. We'll be back. And we're back again. Tony Lee on this side and Tim Palmquist on the other side of the mic. And one of the things I want to do is give people an opportunity to contact you. I don't know if they may want to volunteer. I don't know if they may want your prayers, if you they want your advice. But I would like to at least give them that option if they want to call you and talk to you. So how can they do that?
Well, here in Bakersfield, they can reach us best at 323-BABY. And for those who need the numbers to dial, then it's 323-2229.
But BABY is an easy thing to remember. If you're in your car driving, right. If you can remember 323-BABY, that kind of puts it in your head.
Right. Now, those, if there are any outside the Bakersfield area, we actually do have a toll-free number, although not sure that matters that much nowadays, but 866-949-BABY is the toll-free number. And we do actually get calls from all across the country from time to time, occasionally.
Mm-hmm. How do you fund an operation like this?
It's all done by donations. We obviously don't have any government support, but just individual donations. And there's a few churches that that occasionally help help us financially as well.
Okay. Now I'm also wondering about volunteers. Mm-hmm. Are you, you mentioned your wife works with you on this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have a large organization or a small organization, but do you need volunteers? Do you need people to call you up and say, hey, I've got a spare day or a spare hour. I want to get out there and pray with you or pass out literature or whatever it is you do.
We certainly do. And we believe just as every baby matters. Every voice in this effort matters as well. Now, it is important for people to know that when it comes to volunteering, that we encourage people to kind of start the way we did, where when you first go out there, it's best to not go out there thinking first day out there you're going to be telling everybody everything you know about abortion. But it's best to listen first and watch what other people are doing, and and then in time, you know, we have seminars and things like that from time to time, and so in time hopefully people can learn the best approach, because we have been doing this long enough that we have made all kinds of mistakes ourselves and seen others make mistakes, and so we know some things that maybe don't work too well.
Do people say or do unkind things because they're on the other side of the issue?
On the pro-life side?
If they're on the pro-abortion side, when they see you and your group trying to stop abortions, are they unkind ever?
Or? Oh, that's certainly, that's something that you pretty much have to develop a thick skin. You know, people are constantly saying, get a life, get a job, talking about how, you know, how ugly we are, things like that. And just, you know, actually literally sometimes throwing rocks at us, things like that. We've had a number of times over the years where there have been physical, actually, assaults against us. But I'm thankful to say that really, you know, the worst thing physically that's ever happened to us is some glasses have been broken, you know, and maybe I guess somebody actually this week had their cell phone broken. So, you know, those are things that can be fixed.
Yeah.
But nobody has been physically injured as a result of this. But it is something, you know, you do kind of have to count the cost on that to understand.
If you're going to be a volunteer, you need to be aware that that could happen. Mm-hmm. Are you up for that? Are you strong enough to deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I think it may be, you know, there's a biblical biblical verse about turning the other cheek.
Right.
It certainly would not advance your cause if you got into a street brawl with somebody out there.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't want to, you know, have somebody come up and break your glasses and your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to tell people where you are located or where, but I'm going to leave that up to you. If you do, you're certainly welcome to invite them to come by.
Right. We're located right across the street from the Bakersfield's abortion center. It's 25th and H in Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
And During this time of year, we have a 40-day vigil that, as I understand it, the day that this program airs will be actually the last day of this current 40-day vigil. Mm-hmm. And so if anybody's listening today and wants to come by 25th and H, actually this afternoon, starting at about 6 o'clock, we'll have a time of food and music and just fun out there for a while, and then have a final prayer vigil to close out the 40 days. So this would be a great day for somebody to come by.
Would there be any problems from you know, the people you mentioned? You're across the street from the place that provides the abortions. Mm-hmm. How are they reacting? I mean, do they yell things at you from the window or the doorway or anything, or are they just sort of trying to hide behind the door and say, we'll just try to ignore them, maybe they'll mm-hmm. go away? What kind of reaction do you get from the abortion providers?
Well, usually they do try to ignore us, but it's actually the last few weeks, maybe the last 2 months or so, that they've seemed to be getting more agitated. It's actually been some of the staff members themselves who have been throwing rocks, and one of the staff members who broke somebody's cell phone this Tuesday. So, yeah.
That becomes assault. I mean, at this point now, right, we're talking about a crime being committed. Do the police respond, or do you call them? Or?
Right. Sometimes we don't, to be honest with you. Sometimes we do just turn the other cheek and let it go. But this time, with the cell phone being broken, and we had a clear video of what happened, mm-hmm. we thought, you know, we really do need to call the police on this. And it looks like they're sending it on to the DA at this point.
Oh, great. So how do the police, I mean, obviously in this case it's good, but mm-hmm. I mean, over the years, have you seen things improve or stagnate or decline in terms of the police being out there to protect and serve? Because their right. job is to protect everyone and not take sides and say, well, hey, I believe in abortion, so I'm mm-hmm. not going to protect you against that. How does that work?
Well, obviously, officers are individuals just like us, and some have feelings our way and some have feelings the other way. But over the years, for the most part, our experiences with the police were negative. You know, if anything happened and they came out, they would say, well, what did you do to provoke this?
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, last several years, we've really seen a clear change in the attitude of the police department. And if I were to put my finger on why that happened, I would have to give credit to a very outstanding Bakersfield City Council member we have here, and that's Jackie Sullivan. And on a number of occasions, when we've had issues with the police in the past, she said, well, I'm going to call the chief of police and talk to him about this. And probably having a city council member mm-hmm. talk to you probably has an impact, I'm
yeah,
guessing, because it looks like it has made the difference.
Right. Now, I guess one final question I would ask you is, are the abortions that these people are coming in to get, I'm going to guess that they're going to say, well, it's a clinical setting, these are trained physicians, so at least I'm safe. And the option is, if I can't go there, well, I'll run down to the back alley here and pay mm-hmm. somebody with a coat hanger, and because one way or the other, I'm determined. How would you say I'm not even sure what my question is here. I'm just wondering how legal versus illegal, which mm-hmm. is better? Is one better than the other? Does one save people from the other?
Well, historically, I understand that when abortion became legal in 1973, that it was actually many of the same back alley abortionists who simply hung out a shingle now as a legal abortionist.
Oh, I see.
And we have seen that even after 1973, that abortion has continued to be dangerous for women. We've seen countless times, I can't count how many times here over the years, we've seen ambulances come and take women away. I've actually knelt at the grave here in Bakersfield of a woman in Union Cemetery who died during an abortion here in Bakersfield. So it is something that is dangerous for women as well.
You know, Tim, I'd really like to thank you for, first of all, for what you do, because my personal opinion, for whatever that's worth, is it's a very heroic thing that you're doing at great cost to yourself, your family, your time, and so on. And I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
And secondly, I'd like to thank you for coming in here and spending some time with me this morning talking about it. And I thank you folks at home and hope that you'll give some thought to it and see where you fit in this whole question. We'll see you next week.